I'm Wolf Baunick. I've started my travel industry days in the late 80s, and it's good to count, over 30 years, I believe. My first job, and I would love to tell you about it, was a destination representative for Yugo Tours, a tour operator in former Yugoslavia that was bringing foreign visitors to the coast of the Adriatic and some other spots in former Yugoslavia.
Welcome to Voices of Travel, The Next Chapters, an interview series that captures the passion, humor, and character of 15 remarkable people as they tell us the stories of their careers in the industry. Thanks for joining me, Wolf. Who was your mentor? Who was the person who had the biggest influence on your career? And how did they influence it?
I would say I was very fortunate to have had a few. The first, and I would say the most important one, was Ed Rogers, who was the head of Globus family of brands in Canada. That was my first job. And I remember my mentors by a single important sentence they've told me. Ed's sentence was, when you think you're done for the day, do one more thing. And I kept it as my mantra until now.
What was the industry like when you started? How is it different from today? Can you paint us a picture of what it was like?
When I started, we were still using telex. So one had to learn a very unusual thing to be able to operate in the industry. So clearly the communication was very, very different, and it affected the promptness of response and activity happening. So we were doing it slower, but I would say it was very reliable. There was a process that was not fail-safe, but it worked very, very well. So communication, technology, marketing, and then with the industry becoming a business, i.e. with smaller operators getting purchased or formed into a larger entities, the culture of the industry started changing towards very corporate, from very emotional and very inquisitive exploratory to corporate accounting, shareholders, share values. So that has been the real big change, in my opinion.
Were those changes a good thing or a bad thing as you see it?
I think it's an inevitable thing. You can hardly call it or qualify it as either. It is following the trends in the other industries. And we often say in our industry that we lag behind with technology, with investment, and other aspects. And to some extent we do, but we also bring a lot of new things where we repurpose certain technologies, certain processes, adapt it to a global playing field and in a way, contribute in a meaningful way to the evolution of the economy globally.
So there's always something good in change?
I believe that there is always something good in the change. And one of the good things was clearly the involvement of the travel industry in sustainability and corporate social responsibility, because I think that was long overdue. We all saw it. We all were a little bit hurting because we couldn't change certain things. But now there are vehicles and there are opportunities to make our industry really lead the sustainability effort.
Sustainability is one of those questions that comes more to the forefront, considering the things that we've seen related to climate change in the last few years. Is the industry doing enough? I know there are a few leaders out there, but isn't there more to be done?
I would say, yes, relative to sustainability, is our industry doing enough? I think that there are certain leaders who are very, very active, and they have the voice and they have the traction that we need. On the other hand, I believe that in today's media, which tends to always polarize issues, there are many voices speaking against travel. I think that the truth is in the middle. We all know how many jobs travel brings to the local communities. Now, when we overlay sustainability and ensure that those communities get a fair share of the earnings from travel, we are really talking true progress. Is that easy to achieve and is it linear? I don't think so.
Travel is a privilege, and it's only a small percentage of the world that actually travels.
It is a privilege activity, but again, I believe it is a fundamental human activity. If Marco Polo didn't go to China, our world would have looked different. Okay, he was there commercially, but he was also a traveler. If you think that the first mass travel was Napoleonic Wars around Europe, that's when hundreds of thousands of humans were transported from A to B, our world would have looked different. So I'd say rather than looking in the past, I think we want to look in the future, but learn from the past.
You've been in the coach tour business for quite a while, and I'm wondering if you can put it into perspective, because today's coach touring is not your grandmother's coach touring. So what was it like when you first started in the coach tour business, and how has it changed, and why has it changed?
Indeed, the coach touring business really evolved from the 70s when it became a kind of way to travel. It was efficient, it was financially viable, and it was very basic. It was really a transportation combined with accommodation, and the guide was really there to both guide people, but also to kind of facilitate and iron out certain kinks. And I was very fortunate that my parents took me on a coach tour to Italy from my old home, Yugoslavia. I caught the bug then. I thought that our tour director was the coolest guy in the world. I didn't even know of James Bond at that time, but let's say I had the feeling that he was like a James Bond. He knew everything. He was very elegant. He spoke Italian. He spoke English. So there were those who already understood the potential. Then the potential went haywire in the 70s and in the 80s, especially when US dollar was super strong against European currencies. Americans were flocking into Europe. And then as the volume was increasing, the process is starting being formulated better. There was a period when coach touring was mechanically or technically very well organized. But that kind of lost the soul. Those elegant, knowledgeable people who were the focus suddenly kind of disappeared.
So if this is Tuesday, it must be Belgium.
Exactly. But that's a good movie. I kind of like it. And I lived in Belgium, so I've spent quite a Tuesday in Belgium. And then the next level of coach touring and the evolution was really the experience. It wasn't just important to see five sites. What became more important is to see how do you experience that particular site. So there, it became really a lot more selective. It became really a lot more emotionally charged. And maybe to some extent, the knowledge that was sometimes behind all these things is displayed in a little bit of a different way. But I think it works for the current consumer. And I think that guided vacations, which is now the name for the coach touring, and I believe it is more applicable, will continue to exist simply because it does give as full a picture of a destination or a region as one can get in a certain period of time.
And many escorted tour companies have introduced a range of different styles, and that seems to be welcomed by consumers.
And I would say that the evolution of cruise line industry affected coach touring and vice versa.
How so?
I believe that cruise line was paying attention to the experience on site or on the ship, which coach tourers didn't do in terms of like the coach was just a method of transportation. On the other hand, coach touring and guided vacation affected the cruise industry by making these tidbits, which they call shore excursions, a lot more experiential, a lot better defined, a lot more fulfilling. So there's been kind of a bit of a cross-pollination, if you wish, which is really displayed the most in river cruising. That's kind of the baby of cruising and guided vacations, coach touring, which created really guided vacations.
I want to ask you about some of the events that have taken place during the course of your career. And I'm hoping you can sort of rank them for me in terms of the impact they've had on the business, the disappearance of mom and pop agencies, commission cuts by airlines in the 1990s, the rise of the cruise industry, Y2K, 9/11, SARS 1 and 2, COVID, industry consolidation, and anything else you'd like to add that I might have missed.
Yeah, the impact of external forces and global events on the travel industry, far too many to address them all. I will speak from my personal and emotional experience. The first Gulf War, that was something that I will never forget. And then it really affected the industry immediately after the first next season, because I believe that was the first televised conflict where you basically could see what was going on, and it was really impactful
in the
90s. The second one I remember more vividly than any other is SARS. At that time, I was working for Globus, and our sales went down by about 70%. I might be wrong, but to that extent. So it was absolute disaster. However, I remember it because at that time I was director of marketing and business development. When most of the industry pulled back from advertising, I have convinced the owners not to decrease Canadian advertising budget, and we were out in the media, and the increase of our sales the year after was 93%. Of that small base, we have mitigated the loss, and I think I remember it because I thought I was taking a risk, but that risk paid off and it ended well. The other ones, more recent, yes, I think that, you know, COVID was really impactful because it completely slowed us down in our tracks, and I have to say, I suffered personally from that inactivity, from inability to do my job, to be with my team, to be with our partners and our clients. And I would say that one was the hardest.
What about internal challenges in the industry? There's been consolidation, airlines cutting agency commission in the 1990s, economic challenges, and more. Is there something that's an internal industry issue that sticks out in your mind?
Internal industry issues, there are many, but in my mind, the most glaring ones that affect our productivity and our ability to introduce new business are lack of investment in technology, which is fortunately changing. Like the future looks brighter because technology was super expensive when you had to buy the whole booking engine or to build it. Now, with software as a service business model, that is changing dramatically. So even a smaller operators can, through membership fees, SaaS model, they can acquire technology which would have been otherwise impossible for them to get. So technology is number one. Number two is labor, qualified labor. And I think, like many industries, we will simply have to figure out the business process outsourcing model for some aspect of the industry if we cannot fill that gap internally or locally. And we see displayed from the airline industry to the retail travel agencies to the tour operators. It is very, very hard to attract workers to our industry because we are not known as the highest paying industry, and we truly aren't. And we have to reinvent some of those attractive points that were drawing people to travel. I personally always like to travel. I will always forego nominal earnings for the ability to roam around the world.
All right, Wolf, let me go back to technology. It's been part of the industry. You have the internet, social media, and now it's artificial intelligence. Can you talk about how you see those things, how they've had an impact, and how they will potentially have an impact going forward?
The impact of technology and its evolution on the industry, absolutely. I think internet was the first huge change for every industry, travel industry included, because suddenly searching for certain, say, operators in destinations became a lot easier. Back in the day, Baxter was publishing a guidebook, so we would go, that was our Bible, and I used it often. Internet replaced those sources of information and made them quicker and faster. Then online marketing started, right? Then social media came into play. So it has completely changed the display and the marketing of the travel product. And that was really a positive change. It had some ill effects, but I think it was overall positive because it enabled people who would not have had an access to the content to have access to the content. Then social media played a huge role. I think social media's role is now basically almost taken as something that is a must, a needed approach. My opinion is that social media has lost its attractiveness to the individual users because it became corporate, very much so now. And now the next step is AI. AI is very interesting. I use it quite some because I like to write, and I'm using it now mostly for writing. I think I'll start using it for presentations. AI has the capability of really putting together elements from different sources, and you kind of really function there as an editor if you know how to use it, which does make life easier to a large extent. However, fact-checking is something that is a must, both with online media, AI, internet, because I believe that we have become, as users, a bit lazy to do the due diligence. So, as always, it's not just a silver bullet. It's always something that needs some sort of qualifying and some sort of fact-checking. But I believe that the industry will benefit from some aspects of it, not in the same uniform way across all of the levels of the industry, but I believe overall, yes, it will be beneficial.
I want to go back to sustainability because one of the questions I want to ask you is, travel and tourism is an industry that always wants to grow, more revenue, more arrivals, more jobs. And I'm wondering how you balance that with the need to develop an industry that's sustainable, so there's no over-tourism.
Sure, it is sustainability and you know, the effect of tourism on certain popular destinations is a big question. And I believe that there are opportunities to really mitigate overcrowding, number one, as a problem. But also there are opportunities to really give back more to the other communities. So I believe that part of the answer is dispersion. Because if you go back into the coach touring, Italy was Rome, Florence, Venice. I beg to ask, where's Pisa? Where's Lucca? Where are so many places in Italy? For instance, let's use Italy as an example, where you still have a lot to show, a lot of attraction. So I believe that national tourist organizations, so government stakeholders, combined with the industry stakeholders, combined with the right players in the sustainability sector, really need to look at the larger picture. We can't keep sending hundreds of millions of people to Venice. How many of them go to Padova? And Padova is 20 minutes by train. So we need to really look into a destination as a larger, as a painting of a certain size rather than just one square. That is one of the elements. The other elements is physical practices, i.e. what does a resort do to mitigate the effect of the garbage they produce? How do they manage that locally? So once those checks and balances are completely defined, I believe it'll be a lot better picture because it'll be able to create work on a larger base, and it will really kind of disperse the overcrowding from the places like Barcelona, Venice. We all know, we all read about it, and it shouldn't be happening because it does affect the life of the locals. We need really to work hard to create that balance where the locals really welcome the visitors, but visitors are mannered enough and educated enough not to disturb the environment they're visiting.
I hope that change will come.
But I believe it's already coming. I think that COVID disrupted even that process, because I think that the process was pretty much getting into full swing. Then there was a huge gap of 2 years where companies went out of business or were indebted to a large extent, so they had to make up. And that really kind of put the sustainability on the back burner. I feel very strongly that there are strong voices and that there is a huge desire to go back on track. And as the recovery is happening, we're all witnessing it, I believe that, yes, it will become a forefront again. And look at the climate change. You'll even have to change when do you operate certain programs because the climate is not sustaining it. I was in Italy last year. Florence is my most favorite city, and I stay there with long-life friends. And I have stayed in Florence for 4 weeks. Every day, the temperature was 40 degrees Celsius in July. So clearly, it wasn't very comfortable for me, used to the Canadian climate. So I'm thinking now, I'll never go to Florence in July. I'll go maybe in November. Who wants to go to Florence in November? Well, let's change that.
So Wolf, what's your best memory of working in the industry?
That is really a very, very hard question. And, you know, I don't want to answer it with a cliche, right? And one of the cliches is the people I've met, for sure, no doubt. But if I'm to visualize a memory, something that really gave me an insight into something I've never even imagined, I would say my best memory is traveling to Salta and Jujuy, northwestern Argentina, on a FAM organized by Copa Airlines with a wonderful group of people. Out of 10 who were on the trip, 7 or 8 of us are constantly in touch throughout COVID, through everything. So we clearly had such a great immersive time, and the setting was so inspiring that I think it kind of brought the best out of us, and we're still in touch. We talk. There, some are from Puerto Rico, some are from the States, some are from Canada, some are from Mexico. We exchanged greetings, and you know, it was, and the place, Jujuy and Salta are just out of this world. People talk about Buenos Aires and Tierra del Fuego. I challenge everybody who likes Argentina to look into northwestern Argentina.
What about your worst memory?
I guess there are a few. My worst memory in travel, I was a tour director, and I was with the group in Warsaw, enjoying a folklore evening with wonderful dinner. And we were to leave at 6 a.m. in the morning to continue our journey into Soviet Union. And the group enjoyed their time too much, so we stayed late. It was raining, and our coach that was parked on the sidewalk fell through the sidewalk. And my driver comes in and says, Wolf, we have a problem. I said, what kind of problem? Come on, Leo. Well, he says, come out. And the coach is kind of a meter deep into the sidewalk. Eventually, we solved it. But that shock was like, I just couldn't believe it.
Was there ever a time when you thought you didn't want to work in the travel industry anymore? Why or why not?
Yes, there were those challenging times when you see, everything that you have worked for crumble. And you see that you have to do certain things that you wouldn't do. You have to lower the body count in the organization. You have to do things that are right, but they come at a price that's emotionally very high.
Do you have any advice for someone who's thinking about a career in travel? What would it be?
I would tell them to come on in. I would tell them to really look inward and identify what motivates them in life. And again, cliche, especially in our day and age, is go for the high salary. It's nominal. It's always quantity. I would say look into the quality drivers of your life. And if you like to travel, if you like to work with people, if communication is your forte, if you are inquisitive, look into travel. It is still a very good industry. And I'm very happy with the way my career kind of formalized over the decades. And I think many of us have had a great career in this industry, and we may miss some of the nominal remuneration, but I think that we have earned a lot on the intangible side of life, and life is comprised of equal part tangible and equal part intangible in my mind.
So take out your crystal ball and tell me what you see this industry looking like a decade down the road.
I would say technology will become very dominant. I would say that certain level of the industry will be completely commoditized. It'll be a supermarket. I would say that the retail distribution channel will still remain, but it will have to be a lot more specialized. It will become like a medical specialty. You go to see a podiatrist versus you go to see a dental surgeon. So, people will probably specialize in particular styles of travel and very much in particular destinations or regions and develop their following that way on the retail side. I believe that the travelers per se will still be a huge playing field, i.e. some people will travel for shopping, some people will travel for art, some people will travel for sun, some will travel for hunt. So that, I believe, will not change. I believe, the current makeup of the curiosities that drive travel will probably broaden. There is the whole spectrum of people traveling to where the movies or series were filmed. And with Netflix and streaming, clearly people see a lot more of foreign countries because that's where those things are produced. There will be that part, food travel, huge. So yes, I think there will be a lot of branching off. I think that the biggest challenge is going to be in front of the mass tour operators who are generalists. How will they overcome the need to deliver a specialized product, but to make it viable for the large organization. So I think that there will be some shifting there.
Thanks for telling us your story, Wolf. And thanks to all of you for joining me for this episode. I'm Bob Mowat, Executive Editor of Canadian Travel Press, and I hope you'll join me for another remarkable conversation on Voices of Travel, the next chapters.